Welcome, everybody. It is Elaine here today, and it is Wednesday, June 21st, 2017. It's the 3 p.m. Eastern Time call. And today we're going to be talking about play and humor and creativity and just sort of tapping into things that, if you're on the Northern Hemisphere, a great thing to do in the summer, and if you're on the other part of the world, a great thing to do in the rest of the year. But we choose this topic for the summer in the U.S. or in this part of the world because it's so powerfully effective for our kids to really focus on these and give them permission to be a little more playful and use a little more humor this time of year. So let's start with check-ins. Who wants to start? Check-in and take aim. Or a celebration.
I'll
this is
start.
Julie.
I'm sorry.
No, go ahead.
Go ahead. It doesn't matter.
I'm saying that, in 2 days, school year's over, so I just think that's kind of a deep breath, milestone, and just a relief. So that's where we are.
Huge relief. School's out. Okay. And what I'm going to add to that from what you were just saying is school's almost out and your summer is planned. Like, you know what you got
yes.
stuff to do this summer.
Yes, we do.
Right. Awesome. What about you, Julie?
Well, I guess a couple months ago, Mark decided that he wanted to go on adventures and have adventures in his life and more social, I don't know, a busier social calendar. That's my husband. And so we had a party on Saturday. We called it our summer solstice party, and it was a great success. We had kids there, a bounce house with a waterfall thing. And
oh, wow. Like a real.
So we just, yeah, like a real party. And we've just been doing more fun. So I think this is timely, the topic this week. Because fun is not always easy for me because I'm the planner, you know, I'm the organized
yep.
one, so it's hard to let go. Anyway, so that's kind of what's been going on. Things have been going good on that front.
Awesome. Brilliant. Yeah,
yeah.
Matt, I'm confident it'll come up. That's in the calls I've had so far this week that you know, a lot of us, I think, struggle with this issue of play. And I actually posted
yeah.
something in the forum yesterday about a play workshop I did and the book on play. And so we'll talk about it in a little bit.
Good.
So where do you want to take aim? What's the change you want to see? I'd say it's a stumper of a question, but I do ask it every time we get on the call. So
I guess I think where I want to take aim is probably a little thematic as the last couple of calls have been, like rudeness and things like that. But so my son has done a great job of kind of holding back in terms of name calling. But
uh-huh.
again, I think he still has issues coping with anger. And what he now wants to do is come up and like hit. So he'll punch me or he'll kick me. And, you know, he's six and he's scrawny and it doesn't hurt, but it's not acceptable. And it's just, I'm finding it very difficult to respond in a positive and respectful manner when I'm like all alarms go off when he does that. It's just not acceptable to hit. So I think that's where I'd like to take aim.
Okay. So the change that you want to see is, I heard two things. I heard one of it is you want him to stop hitting, but there's also you want to be able to respond well when he does.
Yeah, I just don't, to be honest with you, I don't know what to do. Like, I get confused when he does something like that because
yeah.
I feel like I need to be very stern about it because that's unacceptable. But then I feel like, oh, my gosh, but how am I being, like, positive and how can I adjust?
Right.
So it's just, I don't know. I'm
okay.
really struggling.
All right. I got it. So how to deal with it when son is hitting?
Yeah.
Okay. Yep. And again, everything you just mentioned came up in our conversation yesterday about this topic. So confidence is high that it'll be a good application for you.
Okay, great.
And Julie, what about you?
I think in sticking with the topic and in sticking with the adventures, working on myself in seeing the humor in the little things and not I don't think I take things personal, but I probably am quicker to correct instead of just rolling with it when probably my son is just making a joke, even though I think it's inappropriate. Maybe I can just kind of roll with it some more.
So the change you want to see is sort of pausing your quick reaction.
Yes.
I mean, you said looking for the humor in the little things, right? But I think that's the strategy.
Okay.
Check me if you see it differently, but it feels like that's what you will do to achieve the goal, which is to lighten up a little bit and not feel the need to redirect everything.
Yes.
Does that resonate?
Yes, definitely. My son says, "Mom, how come you always basically I redirect. I'll just kind of ignore what he just said, and I'll move on to what I want the conversation to be."
Mm-hmm.
Instead of so the redirecting totally resonates right there.
Yep. Okay.
So
right.
I need to stop and take a break. Okay, go ahead.
No, it's great. So the change is to sort of not feel it, not redirect everything and sort of lighten up. And it's funny because I had three or four moms on a call yesterday, and every one of us in one form or another was sort of taking aim on lightening up or, you know, chilling out or staying more chill or, you know, there's that. And I think it's pretty common as moms, we sort of get into this, we're the ones that are making it happen. As you said, you're the planner, you're the, right? Very,
yeah.
It's not always the moms, but quite often it is. It's certainly in this community, right? We become frontal lobe,
yeah.
Whether we have a good one or not, right? and so there's this way in which we get really serious. And then, you know, the play happens sort of outside of our realm, and we're trying to get it done. We're trying to make it happen. We're trying to follow through. And we get really disconnected from play. So, you know, and as I say, there's a lot more about that. And I'll tell you that in the call we had yesterday, because it was with a bunch of, you know, parents of teenagers, I had this huge aha, because we talk about using humor and play and playfulness. But the notion, we talked some about the different styles of play, and I'll talk about that in a minute. But I think the core piece here is to start with the importance of play and humor as a way to sort of lighten everything around us, our brains can actually process information better from a place of lightness or humor or play. Coincidentally, the interview that I did with Kirsten Milliken is the featured article on our site this week, the featured guest article. And if you haven't listened to it, I really recommend it. It's about a 20-minute interview. And it's about consequences. And the article is titled something like, "Do Consequences Work for ADHD or Are They Counterproductive?" But what she's really talking about in the article, in the conversation, is the research on play and what we understand about what happens when we direct or redirect from a place of playfulness versus from a place of sort of blame or judgment. And she talks about what happens in a kid's brain, actually, like what happens in terms of dopamine when you direct one way versus another. And that you can ask a kid to do the same thing, and how you ask them will have a different chemical response in their brain and ultimately get a different result. It's fascinating, right?
That's amazing.
It is. It's totally so amazing. And I have found it to be totally true in my world with my family, because my husband's really, really playful, and I used to get really angry because he was the one that could be playing with the kids, and I was the one that had to make sure everything got done. And I'm not a big player. Like, I'm not the one who likes to climb on the floor and play with dolls for hours, or like, I'm sort of a doer kind of a person. I got my own hyperactive issues, you know. And so when my kids were little, it was like I found playing with children to be mind-numbingly dull and a really hard thing, right? Can anybody relate to that?
I get it.
Yeah. Because what qualifies or constitutes play at that age was just not in any way compelling to me. But what I began to understand was the distinction between play and being playful, right? And playful is more of a sort of an approach or an attitude. Using humor, joking, can make a huge difference in keeping somebody else off of the defensive and keeping them open to what the conversation is about or what you're asking, or, it keeps them off the defensive. And that openness is so key to the relationship on so many levels. So the value of using humor and play is not just, so part of it is for us, it's about our style or our approach and making sure that we're approaching them with a lightness so that we're not shutting them down, right? And then the other is that play is a motivation. It's one of the five motivators for the ADHD brain or the complex brain. And Diane and I sort of group it, play and humor and creativity. It's sort of all the same thing. It's like whatever it is that feels motivating, inspiring, fun, enjoyable. It's different from what I find interesting. It's like, you know, some people are just really inspired by humor or by laughter. Or by just, you know, silliness, right? Sometimes our kids are really, really silly, or sometimes they have a really punny sense of humor. And that's joy to them, that's fun to them, and you can tap into that as a motivator to help them find ways to get themselves to do things that they want to do. So that's another piece of this sort of play and fun and humor and creativity. Is that part of it is for us, and part of it is that it really helps them. Right, when they find a way to laugh, and I think ultimately one of the most powerful things we can teach our kids is to learn to laugh at themselves. And when you have a sort of lightness and a playfulness in your home, you begin to teach your kids that capacity. And it takes time. It's not something that happens. We were talking about it the other day in my family, because my 16-year-old, it's now, I would say, it's almost his superpower now. But when he was 9, it was not. It was not a strength of his at all. But he does have a wickedly good sense of humor. And we just kept, you know, not self-deprecating to the point of being self-harmful or losing self-esteem, but, you know, making it okay to make mistakes and being sort of matter-of-fact and silly and playful about, oh, yeah, did you do that thing I asked you to do? And, you know, there was a time where he would have defensively said, no, or you didn't ask me, and now he'll be like, no, I didn't, and I'm taking care of it right now, you know, because mm-hmm. there's not a judgment behind it. It's coming from a lightness and a playfulness. Mm-hmm. And so the one other thing that I want to touch on is that because we have so many different kinds of kids in our realm, some of our kids are they're verbally really adept and they have really good sense of humor. A lot of our kids, I hear this from parents a lot, my kid is just incredibly funny, right? So do any of you guys have really funny kids? Like they crack you up all the time?
Yeah.
Okay, so that's really common in our community, and I don't know whether it's just the quick-witted brain or what it is, but it happens a lot. The flip side of that is that we have some kids who have language processing issues who actually have a hard time with humor. They may like silly humor because they can sort of process that easily, but like one of my kids really has a hard time with humor. It took us a long time to help her gain a sense of humor and see when people were joking and not making fun of her. And and it was really based in her dyslexia and her language processing issues. So so we have to, we want to use this tool of humor and play and creativity, but we also want to be mindful of how our kids process this information and this approach and make sure that we're meeting them where they are and helping them acquire the strength and the skill if they don't have it. So I'm going to stop there and see what comes up. What are y'all thinking?
I would definitely say so my son is incredibly silly and like goofy silly, but if we try to like kind of play on that a little bit, he immediately gets to the defensive. And especially if he's just a little off in his mood, he just cannot take a joke and will declare, like, if we're in the car, like, he's done, like, we're not allowed to joke in the car. he just immediately takes it personally. And he is dyslexic, so I think it's some of the, you know, everything for him is so literal, and it's hard for him.
Yes, that black and white thinking.
Yes, he's so black and white sometimes. But sometimes he gets in these, like, he has to be in the right mood, and then you can play with him. Like, this morning, it was wonderful. Like, he said something, and I jumped on it, and I did something silly, and it just changed the entire tone. We were having kind of a rough morning. And it could have, honestly, I was taking a gamble because it could have gone either way.
It could have gone either way.
I could have. Yeah. And it just, there's really, like, no rhyme or reason to it. I just got to, because it's always been, like, my go-to is to try to make something funny or, like, tickle or something like that when things were going in the wrong direction. And that isn't always the case right now, but... you know, we keep trying.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's hard.
Yep. Sometimes it is. Well, and here's what I'll say is that, you know, if you keep doing it over time, it will eventually, that defensiveness will usually, if you're doing it from a genuine place of playfulness, right, which it sounds like you are, it will begin to lose that weight. But that's what I'm saying to you is he's young and literally, it took my son until he was a teenager to really be able to laugh at himself.
Yeah.
It just, you know, it's because it's a hard thing to do, you know, if you think about it. A lot of us haven't figured that out.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of us adults. But what you can do is identify when it does go well and sort of reinforce that. So, you know, to go back later and say, that was so cool this morning, the way you handled that win.
Mm-hmm.
You know, to acknowledge him for going with it instead of reacting to it, right?
Yep.
Because sometimes they don't realize they're doing it, and if you point it out to them, then they begin to see a glimmer of a strength. Right.
Yeah.
What else? What else is coming up? Julie, anything for you?
Oh, yeah. So Mark is really, my husband, he's really silly with the kids. And so I look at that and I kind of think, gosh, I wish I could do that, of course. I mean, not of course, I guess, but I think I know that they're having fun. And it would be nice to be able to be the fun one more often. My daughter, she's 11. She can be really silly, and I think she has a good sense of humor. And so my husband will sort of tease her sometimes, and sometimes she can receive it. And I don't know if now it's her age that it's sometimes not taken well, and she gets her feelings hurt and all this, you know, then it becomes I'm thinking teenage drama. And I try to be sensitive to it, but it's tricky. And then my son, he's 13, and he's the kind of kid who he hears a joke, he thinks it's funny, or somebody else got a good reaction out of it, or he got a good reaction out of it, and so he's going to tell the joke 1,000 times. to the point that you just want to you know, wring his neck. Yeah.
Yeah.
So he does that, and also he's learned that some of these things that he sees on YouTube that are inappropriate get a reaction. And so he does all these racial jokes. I'm like, where is this coming from? YouTube. And I say, that's not, you know, you're going to get, somebody's going to get really offended by that, and you're going to get punched in the face one of these days. And so it's hard for me to let that go. Even though I probably would have said the same joke when I was his age, or I would have understood the joke and not been offended by it, but it's, I feel like times are different, and so I'm trying to protect him in a way by asking him to knock it off. But my guess is he's out there on the playground saying those jokes. So that's tricky for me, and I don't know if you have any thoughts on that.
Well, so I'm curious if what you're saying is, I want to redirect the behavior, right?
Yes.
And you understand the behavior, and you understand where it comes from. So part of it is, you know, he's testing, right? He's trying to see what works, what lands with people, what doesn't. He doesn't quite know where the limit is, so he's going to cross it a lot.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
And it's not unreasonable to also set a line and say, I'm all for silly, but, you know, there's a line. We're not going to be racist, and we're not going to be sexist, and we're not going to be, you know, like, that's not okay in our home.
Mm-hmm.
Because he may not know that it's racist or sexist or whatever.
Yeah.
And so maybe in that moment you don't redirect it. But I guess there are two things that come up for me. One is that you may be able to come back and later and say, you know, I was thinking about that joke, and I'm, you know, I wonder if you think it might offend some people. Or, you know, like, get them to be reflective of it at a different time. So that's one way to approach it. Another way to approach it is that if you're generally laughing when you don't like one, it's okay to say it. It's okay to say, all right, that one crossed the line. That I think that one's rude, or I think that one's disrespectful, or I think that one's racist. You know, like, that one, I can't be with that one. If you're not redirecting all of them, you can have an opinion.
Okay.
Right? Because we do want them to know that not everybody has the same humor.
Yes. Okay.
Right? And some people find things really funny that other people do not. And that's important for them to know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I try to say, Logan, you got to know your audience. I mean, I kind of think, you know, the foul language. I know when I was a kid, I would never say those things at home because I knew I'd get in trouble. So I kind of have said to him, if you say it to your buddies at school, that's one thing. Don't say it to me. I don't want to hear it. So that's kind of the same. I mean, that's about the language, not the jokes. But I don't even know if that's the right approach. Because
I'm sort of curious, like, what do you think is the message he's getting when you say it's okay to do that in other places, but you may not share that with me?
Oh boy,
I'm not saying it's right or wrong. Truly, I'm not. I'm listening to you, and I'm thinking, I don't know. So, what do you think?
I don't know. I mean, in some ways, I guess that tells him that he can't be himself around me.
Mm-hmm.
But I also think in life it is kind of like that in some ways. Like, you would act differently in a bar than you would in a fancy restaurant.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
True. I don't know either. Leslie, what comes up for you?
About...
just that particular... I just playing with that issue for a minute, because it's... I don't have an answer, you know?
I think clearly kids are going to do things. I mean, I have a 6-year-old, so
yeah.
It's a little different, but if he were, we ran into a situation where, like, he was doing something at home, which he then did, this was last year, so a five-year-old, got in the habit of, like, he thought it was funny to come downstairs and, like, moon us. And it was funny until he did it at school because he got egged on by his friend.
They tend to frown on that, yeah.
You know, and he actually, you know, it was a thing where the teacher had to contact me, and she actually asked me whether or not she wanted the principal to address this. And because he was like, you know, it's fine. You know, he was okay. The principal didn't think that it was something, but I'm like, no, I want him to go to the principal's office to, like, that's a consequence. You're not allowed to do that. And what we had been telling him at home is like, okay, that's funny, but you can't be doing that out in public because you're going to get, so it's kind of the inverse of what, because he got so comfortable with doing it that then he did it in really a place where he shouldn't have done it.
Truly inappropriate, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And it was, you know, and when we've encountered situations like that, it's almost like, you know, he's not at the point where he's saying bad words or anything like that, but I wouldn't, you know, if I don't want him saying it to me, I don't know that I'd necessarily want, I mean, I think I would tell him that he shouldn't be saying it out. Not to say that he's going to, I was a kid, my parents would tell me to do something, and there's plenty I did that my parents thought I would
do,
and I still did.
Yeah.
But I think, I mean, I, for me, I feel like if I think it's wrong, I think there should be a reason. Like, I think you're right. You should label it. And, like, people might think that this joke is offensive because it sounds racist or sexist or and need to understand that and just know why you don't want to hear it. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. Just my opinion.
Yeah, no, I hear you. I mean, I definitely think there's something about communicating our values here. Right? Like,
yeah,
letting them know what's important, what's not, what's offensive to people, what's not. I mean, we want them, and they, as I say, they're experimenting with these lines of humor and play,
mm-hmm,
and they don't know where the proper line is.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And so we do have to sort of find a way to communicate that. And sort of going back to what you said at the beginning, we want to communicate it without like being a killjoy. Right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, we want to be able to be playful and still be respectful, and it's hard, isn't it?
Oh, yeah.
It really is. Yeah, so many things are coming up right now for me, just so many different thoughts around it. So let me talk about the styles of play a little bit. This is what came up yesterday, which was not what I thought we were talking about this week, but it really feels like it's so resonant. So, as I said, there's this article by Kirsten, this interview with Kirsten Milliken that I think is really useful. And then several years ago, Kirsten and I, she joined me to do a workshop on play, or to do a webinar on play. And I've been doing workshops on play for about 10 years, I guess. And I got into it in part because play is really hard for me, and I'm not a player. And somebody turned me on to this book called Play by Stuart Brown, and it's how it shapes the brain, opens the imagination, and invigorates the soul. And I posted it on the forum yesterday. And it's this really cool book based on, there's a place called the Institute for Play. It's a research institute on play. And they identified 9 different play styles. And what you realize in reading it, what I understood and have learned from it, is that we all have different styles of play, or ways in which we experience play, or we prefer play. And we know what the typical ones are, right? You know, people like to play games. Well, they like to because people who really like to play games tend to be into play because they like competition. Or maybe they're into play because they like, one of the other ones is directing. So, you know, some people like to play games because they like to be the one saying, "You're next, it's your turn," right? And then some people like to play because they get to play out, you know, they get to act. Like some people like charades because you get to, you know, act and do things. So there are nine different play styles. One's the kinesthete, one's the joker, one's a collector. So, you know, when I used to not understand why my kids had all these eraser collections and Super Bowl collections and all these things, like, why do you care? But some people are really collectors. And that's a style of play for them. They like to, they just really enjoy sort of not just stuff, acquiring stuff, but acquiring a lot of things of the same kind, and sometimes they organize them or whatever. And so that's a play style. And so when you begin to understand your play style, you find ways that you can play with your kids in a way that's fun for you, not just fun for them. So, like, I'm never going to be the silly, you know, the silly joker. But there are other ways that I do find that I can play. So I discovered that, I mean, for me, I love to go walk in the woods and be in nature, and that's sort of a kind of exercise of play for me. And so that's something that I can do with my kids. Am I going to be the one rolling around on the floor with them? Never. Just never. I don't like it. It's not fun for me. I'm not interested. I don't want to wrestle. They all know that. It's sort of this whole, I mean, now, like, by now, it's a family joke because it's like, yeah, but not mom. And nobody's leaving me out. They just know I'm not interested, and they respect that, and, you know, and it's fine. But, like, the explorer is something that I am, you know. So that's another play style. And so I love to go on adventures and go investigate things, and that's something that they can do with me. The artist creator is another style of play. And so, you know, we could do art together when they were little. I couldn't sit down and play with silly little dolls, but I could do art, you know. My kids are all performers, so they loved being performers. The storyteller is another style, so my kids would love it if I would get in bed with them at night and tell them a story and make up a story or read them a book. So there were ways that I could connect with them through styles of play that really resonated for me instead of always trying to have to match their style of play. So I'm curious if that resonates for people.
Yeah, I'm not the physical play, roll around on the floor either. I would say I'm the explorer and the maybe a director too, I don't know. But my daughter is definitely a collector. You saying that that's a form of play, that's like, oh, okay, that makes more sense why she's gathering up all these things and has a hard time letting go. And my son was definitely
and
a joker.
And it doesn't necessarily have meaning to them. Like at one point my daughter collected literally just pieces of rocks or bullet fragments she found at camp.
Yeah, but for some reason they're special to her. And
right.
And she's also a creator. She's taken to doing so many things with a hot glue gun. She takes random pieces of cardboard and she'll build all kinds of stuff. And so she gets really upset with me when I throw away cardboard. And so I finally said, okay, Parker, now I get it. You think of cardboard as an opportunity, and I think of cardboard as trash. So I'm going to try to think of it as an opportunity for you instead of just thinking of it as trash. Because really, that's what she sees. She sees that she can build something.
Right. So can I make a suggestion?
Sure.
We used to keep something called a junk box in the playroom. And we would save pieces of cardboard. You know, when things would come delivered to the house with, you know, interesting pieces of styrofoam or an empty thread of yarn or, you know, whatever, just any kind of sort of random objects that were not dangerous. And we'd put them in the junk box. And we just kept a cardboard box full of junk pieces, and they made the most interesting, creative things out of them.
Okay.
It was great. And so sometimes it'd be like, no, don't throw that away. Put them in junk box. You know?
Yeah.
um, and, And I'm, when I say like 10 years we had this junk box, we had it for a really long time. And we used to have a tradition on Hanukkah instead of store-bought gifts. We would always have one night that was homemade gift night. And they would go to this junk box and they would make, like, somebody made me a race car once out of toothpicks and ceramics. I mean, so there is a real, if she's a creative type, there's a real opportunity to sort of foster that. And I love the way you sort of recognized, okay, this is junk to me, but it's not junk to you.
Right. That's right. It's hard, but I don't do it with every piece of cardboard, but I do save some of them.
Well, and that's okay. What I'm saying. Give it a designated place.
Yeah.
Give it a home and a purpose, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that way you can then go, yeah, this one's a weird shape. It doesn't fit into the box. This one's going to go. Or we've got enough in the box. This has got to go kind of thing.
Yeah. Yeah. I like that. Then there's a limit. If it doesn't fit in the box, nope.
Yeah. But don't get a teeny tiny box. Be reasonable.
No, I but it won't be a refrigerator box either.
No. It's got to fit on a shelf in the, you know, playroom or the bedroom or something.
Yeah, I know.
But so what you said then, though, that's really most important is that you're already sort of being mindful of and respecting her style of play.
Yeah.
Right?
It
and what's playful to her.
A while to come to that. Yes. Yeah.
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 So when you do, what's different and how does it change your relationship with her?
I think it just takes the relationship to more, it just feels better. It feels like we have a better relationship, and she knows that I'm not against her or out to ruin all of her projects. So there's a closeness, I think, that has kind of come by that, and me appreciating what she's done and, you know, saying, oh, I can't believe you made that. That's amazing. That's so cool. I would never think to do that. So I think it's been good.
Yeah. There was one time I remember my son used to be really, really into Minecraft. And it, again, mind-numbingly just dull to me.
Yeah.
But at some point I realized that he's got sort of an architectural kind of brain. And he was creating these elaborate structures.
Yeah.
And it was really like when I stood back and realized, like, he would love nothing more than to show me what he created. And so my getting curious and interested about what was it about it that was so intriguing to him, instead of just my tendency to just sort of react to him, it shifted a lot because it really was fascinating for him. And he really was actually doing something sort of interesting to him. It just wasn't particularly interesting to me.
Mm-hmm.
So if we go back to the original topics where you took aim today, right? One of you was talking about sort of lightening up a little bit and not feeling the need to redirect everything. And then Leslie, you were talking about like when your son hits, and how do you deal with that? So what's coming up for either of you about the change you want to see and the opportunity that this conversation may present?
With my son, thinking about Minecraft as a perfect example, you know, watching these videos of people playing Minecraft, and I don't get it, but when I have, he wants me to sit and watch with him. He wants the same thing. He wants me to play Minecraft with him or watch basketball videos with him. But normally I just, okay, I'll sit with you, and then I'm on my phone while he's watching TV, and that's not building a relationship. So that's what he likes. So I need to, in some way, figure out how to make myself sit through the videos. I mean, there's other things that we like jointly. Going outside, doing, being on a lake or something. We would both, my son and I would both enjoy that. But that's hard to get
right.
to all the time on a regular basis.
Yep. Yep.
So,
Well, and so, I mean, part of you, I hear you saying, so it would be good for me to sort of meet him and see, get curious about what is it about this that is interesting to him, and you can ask him that, like,
yeah.
wow, what fascinates you about this, right?
Yeah.
And then the other thing I hear you saying is, and there's something valuable about looking at, okay, where do our play styles intersect? Where is there
mm-hmm.
something that we can both enjoy?
Yeah.
That I don't feel like I'm always sitting and watching paint dry.
Yes. Correct.
Because ultimately, sitting and watching paint dry is not going to, it's going to backfire on you at some point, right?
Yeah. I can only watch so much paint dry before I
exactly.
lose it. So, yeah.
Exactly. Right. So what about the issue of him hitting? How does that come into play here? Does that resonate for you? Just the larger conversation about play, not just play styles, but when he's hitting, what's happening for you? Do you have a sense of the message you're telling yourself? Leslie, are you there?
Sorry, I had
to. Can anybody hear me?
Yeah, yeah.
Sorry, I'm having phone problems,
yeah.
So I'm immediately going to, they can't hear me.
No, I can hear you. I wasn't
okay.
sure if Leslie.
Sorry.
So my, you know, the issue is more if he were kind of wrestling or being playful, that's one thing. It's really in the context of anger when he hits.
Okay.
So it's for me, what comes up is, you know, fear. I mean, the first, you know, it's, oh, if I'm too passive about it and becomes a normalized behavior, you know, when he's 16, you know, that's just unacceptable.
Right.
So that's
so,
what's coming
so we
up
have
for
that,
me. Like,
right. So we have that tendency to look and say, if he's behaving it this way at 6 and he does that at 16, then we've got a serious problem. So, and yet, developmentally, it's not totally inappropriate. You wouldn't be surprised if a 6-year-old is experimenting with this behavior, right? He
right.
sort of knows it's wrong, but he sort of doesn't know it's wrong, or he's not sure, and he's testing that limit.
Well, the thing that's interesting is he knows who to pick out. So the interesting thing that happens here is if my husband and I are both in the house, and it's my husband who says, no, Anderson, I'm taking the iPad from you. You're done. You're not using it anymore. He'll come to me and hit me instead of going to my husband and hitting him. So he doesn't hit his dad. He hits me. So it's
right.
interesting how he picks, like, everything. Well, I think we had this conversation probably a couple of weeks ago. Everything is my fault. I have, no joke, walked in from not even being in the house, and he's into it with my his dad. And he says, it's all your fault, Mom. Like, I literally just walked through the door. So it's that, you know, like, everything's my fault. So it's interesting how he does. He picks me out as the one who he's going to express his deep anger and emotion to. And the one thing, yes,
what
it's
do you
very
think
flattering.
That's about?
He feels safest with me, but I don't
yeah.
know.
Yeah.
It's flattering, but
yeah.
it's also like, really?
Right. Well, and that's not, I mean, I don't think, I don't want to suggest in any way that it's not a behavior you want to redirect. I think you want to redirect hitting behavior at any time, really. Because hitting's not okay, right? It's just not.
Right.
So it's absolutely appropriate, reasonable to shift that. And so there's sort of two issues. One is, what's the conversation you have with him, not in the heat of the moment, to help him understand that? And then the other is, how do you handle it when before he's learned this lesson?
Right.
Does that resonate?
Yeah. I mean, typically, my response is to, say that's not okay, and I try to get away from the situation just so that I'm not available to be hit. But, to the same respect, a part of me is saying, am I then saying that I'm, not available to him emotionally or as a, it's a difficult situation. Like, I'm having, conflicted thoughts about how to address this.
Right. So have you had a conversation with him at a separate time about it?
Oh, absolutely. And the thing is, it's the classic situation of his brain getting hijacked, because typically he will calm down and immediately come to me and say, "Mommy, I'm sorry.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't mean to do that."
So I get he knows that it's not okay. Have you two talked about how you should handle it when that happens?
No.
I would ask him.
Okay.
I know you don't mean to. I know that you're not doing it to be hurtful to me, that you're sort of, however you phrase it for you, and you're, your brain's taken over, or you're just so angry you're having a hard time controlling yourself, whatever it is. What do you think I should do when you're like that? How would it be? How can I help you calm yourself down? Ask him, because some kids may say, sometimes that's the kid who needs a giant hug.
Mm-hmm.
And so he may be seeking actually physical touch in a strange way.
Yeah.
And so, so begin to get help him not only raise awareness to the behavior and the need to change it, but that you actually do want to help him learn to manage it, and you're trying to figure out what will work best for him.
Yeah. And I've been trying to incorporate him more into, okay, when this happened, what do you think would be a good, what should we do about it? And typically I get to,
I don't know, right.
So we'll see.
So if you get, I don't know, how do you want to handle that? How would you reply to that?
I would probably tell him, I need to know, I need to react a certain way, because the hitting is not okay. I understand you're angry, but we need to find another way of dealing
okay.
with it.
So,
remember to beware of the butt.
Say again.
I've got to get off the call. But I'll talk to you guys in 2 weeks. Thank you.
Okay. Bye. Have a great week.
Bye.
Bye. You too. Bye.
So Leslie, remember the beware of the butt, because as soon as you say, "I know you're out of control or you're really angry or upset, but we have to stop this," you've actually negated the acknowledgement.
Yeah, okay.
Right, so I know you're really upset, and I want to be able to help you better. So if he doesn't know, so remember the whole thing is about transferring the baton, right?
Right.
First we're directing, and then we're beginning to foster ownership and modeling it for him. So if you say, "How should I handle it?" and he doesn't know, then you can model it by saying, "Well, I have a few ideas. Do you want to hear them?" I could give you a big hug. I could hold your hands. I could walk away. I could, give him 3 or 4 ideas.
Okay.
Do any of those sound like that might be helpful for you? you know, at another time after that, you then help him begin to come up with his own strategies for managing when he's angry, for noticing when he's angry and coming up with strategies. But first, you're dealing with hitting. And so at this stage, instead of just directing, I'm going to do this when you do that, you're now beginning to bring him into the conversation, but you still have he still needs you to model it. Here are some choices. Which of these feels like it would be a good fit? Which one do you want to try first? Which one, you know, or do you have another idea? Do these help you come up with other ideas? You know, in my family, hugs are a big deal, but there are times where they're like, not right now, don't touch me.
Oh, of course.
And so, right, and so we have conversation about, do you need a hug right now? You know, because he may.
Right.
So that's that that intermediary step between directing him and letting him decide is modeling it for him and helping him come up with some ideas. And asking his input after that. Okay?
Yep.
Does that sound helpful?
That's very helpful. Extremely helpful.
Okay. So just as we're sort of wrapping up, what are you taking away from today? What's your aha?
I think the one thing, you know, there's several things, but the different play styles. I have never been the like car playing, whatever, but he my son is that kid who likes to build things, and he's creative like many of our kids are. And he often does, when Julie was talking about the Minecraft, he loves watching, I don't know what, all the kids watch this one guy play Minecraft, and he tells you about it, and he just wants to share with you and connect. But one thing that we all like doing is going to the beach and exploring, and so we've been doing a lot of, like, tide pooling and things like that, and it's something that, it's a nice connection. And
lovely.
We can find a lot of common ground. It doesn't have to be like, oh gosh, do I have to sit through another video, or do I have to, you know, because we often try to play together, but it is like your typical kid. And I think you posted those cartoons, and I
were they hysterical?
Because there was one like, like, Mom, will you play with me? And then you start playing. It's like, no, you're not doing it right. And it's like,
right?
What? So we do run into a lot of that, like, or, you know, he'll be like, Mommy, will you build with me with Lego? And I'll build something. And it's like, oh, that's great, Mom. And he's very respectful about people's creations. So he'll be like, Mom, I might have to change this a little bit. He's like, okay.
Yes, can you see that? Yeah,
and it's
you have
fine,
my permission.
You know,
it's okay.
You know, and I'm saying, you know what, I have 10 minutes. And it's hard because I am also that person. If I'm sitting and playing, to me, is like, oh, my gosh, I'm wasting time. I didn't do my laundry. Like, I have two things of laundry baskets right now that I have to fold. It's like all these things.
Okay, just rule of thumb, this is just, you know, this is free advice. He is old enough now to, when he's watching something on television, he could be folding laundry. I stopped folding laundry when I discovered I could put the laundry basket on the couch, and if the TV was on, they better be folding the laundry.
Ah, that's good, yeah.
Just a suggestion. It was great.
I first have to teach him how to fold.
Yeah, and you have to accept it not being perfectly folded.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
Because they have to learn. But, yeah, that was – or for years it was just the towels. They only got the towels.
Yeah.
But, I mean, seriously, how hard is it to fold towels?
Ask my husband, who has to have everything done, like, particular.
Well, that's another issue. That's another place to take aim for another day.
I know. It's so funny.
All right.
Oh, it's like his OCD.
any commitments you want to make from today?
My commitment is really to change the but to the and. Because I
Great.
Think I do the but a lot. I mean the and, but I do the but.
I know you did. I know you did. Yeah, but we say the but a lot, and you're not alone.
Yeah. So that, and really get his input. I need to really start. I've been trying to, and I need to do a better job of kind of taking it that extra step when he says, I don't know, saying, okay, well, let me help you here. I have some ideas. So
that's great. Love that. Love it.
Excellent.
All right, my dear. Have a fabulous week. Enjoy the last couple
Thank
of days.
You.
Congratulations on the end of another school year. Talk to you soon.
Bye.
Bye.